Today, we are continuing our Lead Like Christ series. And so we're kind of looking at, last week we looked at what does it look like for a lady to pursue God and to become the woman that God created her to be. And today we're going to focus more on the guys. More specifically, I'm going to talk to fathers and how we train and how we lead. I got a question for you. Yesterday, when you heard that President Trump was shot, how many of you immediately knew, without even thinking about it, that the person that shot him was a guy? All of us knew that. I did not need to wait to hear, was this a male or female that shot the president? I just intuitively knew that the person that shot him was a guy. Why is that? Why is it that whenever we see these mass shootings, we always assume it's going to be some young, usually early 20s guy? I'll tell you why. Immaturity. A lack of self-control. The truth is, guys are stronger in some way than females. I'm talking in general now. Okay, is that okay? Guys in some ways are stronger than girls, and in some ways, guys are much weaker than girls, demonstrated by an inability to control desires, to control emotions, to control anger and hate. And so when we talk about what does it look like for us to mature spiritually, to become the people that God created us to be, we have to recognize the things that tend to drag us down, the temptations that hold us back, the natural sinful desires that cause us to do the things that are contrary to the things that God would have us do. What does it look like for us to become the people that God created us to be? I believe that the success of a community is dependent on the success of fathers. If you find a community with weak fathers, you will find a weak community. If you find a community with absent fathers, you will find a community full of rebellious kids and immature adults. Because there is a role that fathers are called to play in their family. I'm not saying in opposed to women. I'm saying in conjunction with mothers to help our children mature, to grow, to put behind themselves the sinful desires that cause us to do the things that are immature, primarily spiritually. Whether we like it or not, fathers, we make an impact on our families, and therefore on our communities. For better or for worse, for good or bad, fathers lead. And as a Christian, my first calling is to lead my family into a relationship with God and away from their sinful desires. I started writing this message one day when I was watching one of those protests on a college campus. And you have all these college students protesting and going nuts and vandalizing stuff and all kinds of other dumb things. And I could not quit thinking, the whole time I'm watching this, I could not quit thinking, where are the dads? Why is this happening? If I would have done that when I was in college, do you know what would happen? My dad would have driven to that college. He would have grabbed me off of that college campus, thrown me in the car, and driven me home. That would not have been acceptable. And I'm not talking about protesting in general. I'm just saying that the immaturity that they were displaying and the inability to control their emotions and act in dumb ways was just on display for everybody to see. They couldn't control themselves, just going crazy. But I wouldn't have done that when I was in college. Why? Partially because I was scared of my dad. So what specifically was it that my dad did that made me a person that would not do that? That would not give in to that temptation to act in that way? I've labeled this type of parenting, I'm calling it monitored freedom. It's giving kids freedom, but not too much freedom. Because if you give your kid total freedom before they are wise enough to manage it, that is just lazy and sinful, right? Why? They've been given to you for a reason. You've been given leadership of them for a reason. God put you in God put them in your family for a reason. So my parents, very early in my life, started to give me small amounts of freedom. And if I would manage that freedom well, then they would give me more freedom. But if I was irresponsible with the freedom that they gave me, they would remove the freedom. I remember the first time my parents told me I didn't have a bedtime. It was a good day. I don't know if you remember that day. So what did I do that night? No bedtime. I stayed up all night. I played Zelda all night long. It was awesome until the next day. I suffered the consequences. I actually suffered the consequences in multiple ways. I couldn't stay awake in school. But then also what happened? My parents, because it was monitored freedom, knew that I stayed awake all night. So what did they do the next night? Guess what? You got a bedtime again. We gave you some freedom. You didn't manage it well. So we're taking the freedom back. And this was a process that happened all throughout my childhood. Slowly giving small amounts of freedom, allowing me to make decisions for myself, to try things on my own. And if it went well, there was more freedom. And if it went poorly, there was less freedom. Until eventually, when I was 16 years old, there was this slowly giving of freedom until it came to a climax when I was 16 and my parents sat me down on the couch and they said, Mike, you are now accountable to God. We are now giving you all freedom. You make decisions for yourself. You come home when you want to come home. You work when you want to work. You do homework when you want to do homework. And they told me, you now have freedom to lead yourself. Now, I think that age is probably different for every kid, and that is a wisdom. This is when a parent is required to have wisdom in the relationship to figure out when should freedom be given and when shouldn't it be given. But what happened was they gave me freedom before they needed to give me freedom, before it was forced on them to give me freedom. But then they followed up the statement with this. They said, you are now accountable to God, but just know this. God's discipline is more severe than our discipline. So be careful. This is what you call a threat. I was terrified. Honestly, they had raised me to believe in God and his presence in our lives, that God is doing life with us. He's not some distant, far off God. He is with us. And so when I heard that I'm accountable to God and I knew the type of discipline that God has done for others in the past, I was terrified. I begged, no, please, I want to be accountable to you. I want a barrier between me and God. I don't want that kind of responsibility on me or not. But they told me, no, you are 16. You drive your own car. You take yourself to work. And they gave me freedom. Now, why did they do it at this time in my life? They do it because I still lived in their house. They do it at this time because they know that they still have time to take the freedom back. They do it at this time because they can still come in and help me if I get in trouble. They can still defend me away from the big dangers of life. It was a trial. The truth is, for all of us, freedom is a gift. This is true about you as an American citizen. This is true about you as an autonomous adult. And this is true about you as children of your parents. Freedom is a gift. Somebody earned it and then gave it to you. But it's a very dangerous gift. It comes with instructions. It comes with a manual. We are giving you freedom, but here is how you should use your freedom. And if you don't use it well, you're only going to cause pain for you and for the people that you're in relationship with. You're only going to cause pain for you and the world that you live in. If you don't manage your freedom well, then punishment is coming in one form or another. A lot of people talk about how God disciplines us. And they give God a bad name because they talk about how terrible, what kind of terrible God would do that kind of thing to people? Well, the truth is, God in his omniscience, in his wisdom, is able to recognize that inflicting some pain now will remove some pain later. I'm going to inflict some pain now to keep a greater pain from happening later. This is what we do in parenting, and this is what God does with us. Paul says this, the Lord disciplines those he loves. If I love my kids, I will discipline my kids. So those kids protesting the whole time think that they are the righteous ones, right? Self-righteous is what it is. They are pretty sure that them spray painting graffiti on the side of that building is the righteous thing to do. And the whole time, anybody who has any wisdom looks at this and recognizes, no, they are still immature. And in their surrender to their rebellious desires, just happened to find a dumb cause to protest for, and they made themselves feel good about it. They're rebellious because they're immature, because they had not yet learned how to manage their freedom well. And their inability to manage their freedom well is just causing pain for everybody around them. A loving father gives monitored freedom to their kids. And God punishes each one he accepts as his children. Now we just got a little more harsh. He punishes his children? Why? He punishes each one he accepts. Why? Because a little bit of pain now could keep from a lot of pain later. And if this is how God parents us, then I should learn from his example, and this is how I should parent my kids. I discipline because I love. I don't set them free with total freedom, with just laziness. I just let them go discover themselves. Go out into the world and become who you want to be. No, I tell you who you are. I don't let you discover it. Let me tell you who you are. You are a child of God. You are a member of our family, and our family is a member of a greater family called the Kingdom of God. That's who you are. There's no maybe, possibly, discover, or pick, or choose. This is who you are. Some call it brainwashing. I call it parenting. Wisdom. But then something changes. I tell my kids. I train my kids. I direct them onto the right path. But then I know that someday they are going to not live in my house anymore. And I have to hope that the lessons that I taught them, or that they learned while they were still in my home, carry them beyond. Because something is going to change eventually. That eventually, probably, they are going to get married. And they are no longer just going to be my kids. They are going to receive a new responsibility to do for their kids what I did for them, or hopefully did for them. And then they are going to have to take responsibility on a whole new level. Dads, take responsibility. And I want to take this idea pretty far, beyond just you have to have a job and make sure that you pay the bills responsibility. I'm talking about taking responsibility to an extreme. If my kids break a law, then I think I should take care or take responsibility for some of the consequences for their actions. Now, they do too. I'm not letting them off the hook. But I think to some extent, if my children rack up a bunch of debt, then I do whatever I can to step in and help them, to make a plan, to help them pay the debt, to help them get out of that hole. Because isn't this what Jesus did for us? If we're going to lead like Christ, if we're going to do it the way that he did it, what did Jesus do for us? When we were the prodigal sons, running away from him, what did he do? He came and took our punishment for us. He came and died the death that we should have died. This is what real fatherhood looks like. This is what real parenting looks like. Not from a distance, shouting orders. Getting down on their level working through it with them, helping them through it. But to some extent, this comes naturally, doesn't it? At least it did for me. When I first got married, I did it primarily mostly for selfish reasons. Didn't we all? It's just kind of what happens. Got married, and then something changed inside of me. And I began to experience a desire that I hadn't experienced before to defend my wife, to provide for my wife, to protect her. I don't know if that changed in you like it did in me. But then it went to a whole new level when I had kids. When I had kids, something triggered in me. I went and bought my first gun when I had kids. Something to defend, to provide, to be there, to lead my kids. I believe that that was a gift that God gave me to step up and to lead my family. But then I also experienced empathy. I'm not a very empathetic person. We've done those like tests that tell you all your strengths or something. Empathy is like the last one on my list. I'm sorry. I love you, but I don't care about you apparently. So no, I do. I'm just kidding. But I realized something about my kids. I realized that when my kids hurt, I physically feel it. I don't know. I can't even explain that. But when I think about my kid getting hurt, something, I physically feel pain in my body. I think that's a gift from God that connects me to them, that gives me this desire to step up and do the things that I'm supposed to do as a father. So just know, if you are hurting, your parents are hurting too. Parents are only ever as happy as their least happy kids. That God gave us that. This desire to protect them, to help them, to love them, to care for them. He put that in us. But here's what happens. Immaturity, sinfulness, selfishness can cause us to resist that gift that God gave us. This is what a father does when he turns his back on his family. I know that that God has given me this desire to protect my family, but my selfish desires, the ones about making myself more comfortable or more rich or pursuing other sinful desires, has distracted me from the calling that God gave me to protect and defend my family. And this is what we see all around our world. Fathers that have turned their backs on their family for selfish reasons. That breaks community on a huge scale. You look at a community that is broken and you will likely find a lot of absent fathers. And I have to preach this message specifically to fathers because fathers are much more likely to turn their backs on their families than mothers are. Fathers, you are more tempted because it's easier for you to resist that desire to protect and provide for your family than it is for mothers. I don't know why that is. It's just why, on average, that's the way we were created. That's why 1 in 4 kids are raised in fatherless homes in America, and 1 in 40 kids are raised in motherless homes in America. So dads, when we talk about resisting sinful temptations, sinful desires, we're talking about stepping up and doing the mature, spiritually mature things that God created us to do. And when you see a nation where 1 in 4 kids are raised in fatherless homes, you can pretty easily just know that you found a nation full of people who decided to give themselves over to their sinful temptations, their sinful desires, to not step up and to mature the way we were supposed to mature. Absent fathers break communities. Because God intended a man and a woman, a mom and a dad, to partner together to lead their kids into a mature relationship with God. But at some point, there is some distance that happens. We can lead them only so far. At some point, some distance happens between a parent and their kids. And usually that distance happens, there's a marriage that's happening in there in the meantime. And something changes. When we get married. When we get married, we are no longer just our parents' kids. We are given new responsibilities. to take charge and to lead. Jesus says it this way, a man leaves his father and his mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. What just happened? A life change. A new person was created. Two people became one new person. When you get married, you're not joining a family, you are starting a family. Now you're joining a family too, but the primary change that has happened is you have something that was not there before has begun. On holidays, a lot of parents expect their adult children to come home for the holiday, and they get really mad when they don't. But that just kind of comes with the territory of recognizing now there's in-laws and all this juggling to happen. And you also have to have the consideration, did I build a relationship with the kids while they were young so that they still want to be my friends when they're adults? That's a big, big motivation of mine. When my kids move out of the house, I have this deep desire for them still to want to be in a relationship with me. And I recognize some of that's out of my hands, but that's sure a motivation that I have. Because when they've created their own lives, they've moved out of your home, you can say things like, hey kids, we'd love to have you come home for Christmas. You can even put some nice incentives out there. We're going to have some nice food. We're going to buy great gifts. We got something for your kids. But ultimately, it's up to them, isn't it? And you just have to hope that things went well in the earlier stages so that the relationship is still there so that later in life we can build on that. I had this realization a couple months ago that my oldest son, Lincoln, is almost halfway through his time at home. We're almost halfway there, and he's going away to college or whatever else he goes to do. That's terrifying. I feel like he was just born. Where did that time go? What happened? There's no way. This math doesn't work. I don't have any time left. And that lights a fire under me. That gives me a desire to step up. If this is my primary calling, then it's got to be something more than just something I do on the side. And so I've started to create a list of dailies. What am I going to do every day to make sure that between now and then, we have done what we need to do to build a solid foundation that he can build on for the rest of his life? That this isn't a life built on sand that's just going to fade away when he goes away to college and some professor tells him that God's not real. That we've built a solid foundation that he can build his life on. So we have some work to do. We got some building to do. What's it going to look like? It means that today I'm asking every day, what am I going to do? What am I going to prioritize? I'll tell you what it looks like for me. It looks like daily we're going to talk about Jesus every single day. Daily we are going to find a way to play together. Whatever that looks like, whatever stage of life, we're going to find a way to laugh together and have fun together. It means that daily I'm going to say I love you and I'm going to show it with my actions. It means that daily we are going to read together and eat together and work together and do laundry together. I don't know if you know this, but Adam and Eve did not wear clothes until after the fall. That means that laundry is a result of sin. Run from it. Resist that evil. We've only got so much time to do the things that God created us to do, the tasks that God set before us to accomplish. We only have so much time. We got to make a plan. We got to be intentional. Today, every single day, do what is most important. Put it first. Don't put it off. Don't delegate it to the governments and hope that the government raises our kids right and complain when they don't. This is my family. I take responsibility for it. I step up and I make sure that the right things happen in my home. This is the task that God has put before me. I think that sometimes we overestimate what we can do in the short term and we underestimate what we can do in the long term. This is the difference between a good leader and a bad leader. A good leader sets a long-term goal. Here's where we're going. Here's the big picture. And then we create a timeline so that by between now and then, we are going to get there. And we may not have all the details and all the steps in place to make sure that we do everything perfectly, but we hold the primary, most important things into perspective at all times. This is where we're going. This is the ultimate goal. Because sometimes we're tempted, you're just like, you're right, Mike, I feel guilty, I haven't been doing enough, so today we're gonna go do 95 things to make up for all the things that I did in the past. And then the end of the day comes and I didn't get any of this stuff done because there's way too much and I thought I could get too much. You gotta create a plan, a whole system. You gotta change the whole lifestyle to make sure that we're putting the right things first. We talk often here at New Life about alignment. And when we're talking about what is our church, who are we, what are our big goals, what do we prioritize? And when we're talking about alignment, what that really means is we say what's most important. So we say, hey, this is the goal. This is the primary objective. We are going to try to get here. And then we begin to define a path about how we're going to get from here to here. What's that path going to look like? But then inevitably what happens? Problems, pain, mistakes. And we begin to veer off the path. I want to get here, but a distraction happens or a mistake is made. And so then we start to lose alignment. What is the leader's job when we start to get off path? The leader's job is to say, no, remember the goal, to get back on path, to continue to realign, to continue to remind people what's most important. Because it's so easy. There's all kinds of temptations that will get us off track, begin to make us think that we want something different, or maybe the ultimate goal is not the ultimate goal we should be going after, or so-and-so made me mad, and so we end up dividing on the path, and now we can't be on the path together, so that we've got to come back together so that we can be on the path together. This is what leadership looks like. Cults constantly realigning to the ultimate mission. And this is what we're supposed to do as fathers and mothers. We say, here's what's important. All these fights and distractions and other things that we want to try and other things that we want to do have to bow to the ultimate goal. And our ultimate goal is a mature relationship with God. That's the ultimate goal. That's who we're becoming. I want to become the person that God created me to be. And so if that's my ultimate goal, then even if I get off path, I've got to learn how to get back on path and pursue God. Because the truth is, there are a bunch of people in this room and a bunch of people watching online that last night did something that you're realizing that just knocked me off the path. That was not in alignment with our ultimate objective. So what do you got to do? You got to get back on the path. You got to remember what's really important, because this world is constantly shouting at you things that they believe are more important than your goal, than your relationship with God. They will tell you that the marketers will tell you that you need to work harder so that you can buy this cool new toy because your neighbor has that toy and it would be so awesome if you had that toy. Or the politicians are constantly shouting at you, no, this is what's more important, and you got to fight for this political battle. You got to go off and give yourself to this cause. Or we get a little bit lazy. I'm tired of walking the path anymore. Whatever it is, we get distracted. And it's our job as leaders to remind people of what's most important, because here's the truth. We are all walking toward our eternal destination. You are not just a temporary being. Your body is not going to die and decay in the ground. You're going to die and you're going to get a new body. You are going to die and you're going to spend eternity with God. And God has front-loaded eternity with the most important decision that you could ever make. Will you be in relationship with Him or not? Will you marry Him or not? That's the big question. How much did your... If those of you who are married, how much did your decision to marry your spouse or not marry your spouse change the rest of your life? A lot. That decision changes a lot. In this life, we've got a big decision to make. Are you going to be in relationship with Him or not? And that changes all the rest of eternity. So if that's really what this life is all about, then we've got to keep it in focus. We got to remember what is most important. The famous passage in Proverbs says, direct your children onto the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it. Now, whenever we read this passage in church, a lot of people get uncomfortable because I know they're rebellious kids, and there's a lot of logistics and painful realities that go into a verse like this. So here's what I want to say. This is a clarifying statement. This is a proverb, not a promise. If you've ever read Proverbs, there's a lot of grandiose statements and a lot of big statements about black and white ways of looking at the world. A promise says this is the way it is no matter what. God gives you promise, count on it. Every single time, 100% of the time, it's going to happen. Promise. A proverb is different. A proverb is a general statement of truth. This is generally true. If you will aim in this direction, it will probably turn out well for you. That's what a proverb is. And so if that's true, then I'll go after it. Then I will make sure that I do everything I can. If it is true that if I direct my children onto the right path, they will not depart from it, then I will give everything I've got to make sure I'm directing them onto the right path. And when they get distracted, I'm going to pull them back. Monitored freedom. Don't let parenting be some side gig. If you are a parent, it is a primary objective. There is nothing else that is more important than that. We don't just supervise our kids from a distance. We don't just yell orders at them from a distance. We train them. It's a hands-on process, and it requires every bit of effort we can give to it. God, I thank you that you set the perfect example of what it looks like for us to lead like you lead. God, I pray for everybody. There's so many different unique circumstances in a room like this, and people, it's experiencing different realities in their life right now. I pray that you will contextualize this message to them, that they will take comfort in knowing that you are a father who loves them unconditionally, that your Holy Spirit right now will wrap loving arms around them and help them to recognize how much they are loved by you. That when they hurt, you feel the hurt with them. You empathize with their pain. And then God, I pray that that truth will invite us to an ultimate life of mature love with you. Thank you for coming to this world to set an example of what it looks like to live sacrificially for the people we love. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.